What can I say? It's just 1 week away, just 1 week until we have our first big event for Grape Encounters Radio. It's Wine Wars. Actually, we're calling it the Sipper Bowl. It's going to be at Sarlos & Sons wine tasting room in Los Olivos. And without further ado, we've got Keith Sarlos on the line. Hey, Keith, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The big event is coming up next week. And
I cannot wait.
Yeah, can you tell everybody how this is set up over there? Because I think it's pretty exciting. You decided that instead of doing a couple of hours in the evening, that we would just go all doggone day long, right?
All right, absolutely.
So are you ready? I mean, for those of you who are not familiar with Wine Wars, it came out of the blue. We were out in McKinney, Texas, which is just about 30 minutes outside of Dallas, and met some folks at a place called the Landon Winery. They've got a couple of tasting rooms, really nice people, beautiful tasting room there in historic McKinney. And we got to talking to Whitney Williams, the tasting room manager, and later on to Bob Landon about their wines. And we were telling them about our show down in the Central Coast and talking about how much we love the Central Coast wines. And Keith, they threw the gauntlet down, didn't they?
Absolutely.
They said, you know what? We're every bit as good as those Central Coast guys. And I asked them if they'd be willing to come out here and prove it. And they said, yep. So we thought, since we have so much fun with Sarlos & Sons, that we'd get you guys involved, and you could be the challengers, right?
Absolutely.
I don't know if you're the challengers. I think you're the it's your home turf, so really, well, it wouldn't make you the challenger. It would make you
I don't know. I think, you know, with wine, it's always a neutral. It's a neutral court.
Yeah.
Always a neutral court.
So I had this, I got an email from somebody yesterday,
yeah,
who was very familiar with Texas wines, and they were also doing some research in California. And, you know, they were giving me all kinds of alternative suggestions in terms of other wineries that we might want to challenge in Texas, you know, at least according to them, some bigger names and whatever. And I wrote the guy a letter back going, you know, dude, this is all in fun, you know?
Absolutely.
It's like, don't take yourself so seriously. Because, you know, these are just nice people that make some pretty nice wines. And the guy in the email actually pointed out the fact that some of Landon's wines are made from California grapes. And, you know, we've told everybody that, but they also make wines from Texas grapes as well. And, you know, frankly, you know, we don't really care. It's all about the party, right?
Absolutely. It always is.
So you've got completely new wines that we're going to throw on the wine bar, right?
Yeah, we sure do. We have looks like 12 wines this year. We're only releasing three or six at a time.
Okay.
So right now we have six on the bar plus one kind of hiding behind the bar, if you will.
So let's run them down. Tell me what you got so far that's out and what's coming up.
Well, right now we have we start off with our daughter Chardonnay, and this is going to be the last year we do Chardonnay, to be honest with you.
Wait, hold up.
Yeah.
Why?
You know what? For a couple of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is, and this is kind of a hard thing to say, so many people truly do love Chardonnay,
right.
But as growers, we feel our Grenache Blanc and our Sauvignon Blanc are every bit as much the grape as any Chardonnay is, and we're kind of taking it upon ourselves, just like, you know, we make tons of bad decisions that turn out to be good ones. To feature Sauvignon Blanc and Grenache Blanc in our tasting room rather than Chardonnay.
Okay, now, have you released those wines before?
No, we never have.
That's what
have.
I thought. And so this is brand new to you, but you have one coming up this year.
Yeah, we do. We're going to release our Sauvignon Blanc and then next year our Grenache Blanc.
Okay, and so these daughter Chardonnays will be,
yeah,
collector's items, no doubt.
You know what? Yeah, last year's daughters, it's the same thing. We got all the girls together. Everybody tasted it, and they said, yeah, this is really the one we want and we want to be associated with. And it really, to be honest with you, is their wine. And I think this year's tastes even better than last year's. And people, the response to it has been, just to be honest with you, pretty overwhelming.
You're saying to the Grenache Blanc?
No, to the Chardonnay.
Oh, to the Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so makes me wonder why you would give that up, because I told you about the time that I poured some at an event, some of your daughter's Chardonnay, and I'm telling you, of everything that I've ever served up from Sarlo's, for whatever reason, that one just had everybody's attention. Now, maybe it was the setting or the food that was being served or whatever, but people went absolutely bananas over that wine.
The only thing I can tell you is wait till you taste the Sauvignon Blanc and the Grenache Blanc.
Yeah, it's
head and shoulders twice the wine.
It's so hard, though, when you get set in your ways.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. By the way, Keith, I gave up caffeine this week.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry.
Talk about set in your ways. I have been making cappuccinos in my very trusty cappuccino machine, which was made by a guy named Salvatore.
Do you know him? Yeah, really well.
Okay, so I'm on my second machine because I wore out the first one, and not because it wasn't a sturdy machine, because it was a machine that you could just beat the living tar out of.
Oh, yeah. If you ever visit the guy, it's like Geppetto's workshop.
Oh, listen, no, I was there a couple of weeks ago. I stopped in to see him, and I wanted to tell him that, in my opinion, the machines that he makes are the very best machines I've ever seen on planet Earth. And I've probably owned, 30-plus cappuccino and espresso machines, but his are so incredible. I mean, they're
like... Do you have a push button or a lever press?
I have a push button.
Ooh, you know what? Your next one's a lever press. It's twice the machine.
But the whole point is that I wanted to sort of cut back on the caffeine, so I thought I would see if I could do it. And now I'm so...
Give up.
I know, but I... I'm trying to bring myself to buy some decaf espresso beans, and I'm struggling with it, to be honest with you.
You'll enjoy it. Do you think it's tasting the foam? And
now you ran a coffee house for a long time, right?
Yeah, coffee houses.
Okay, so is there a difference? Am I going to freak out when I do the decaf cappuccino? Is what I'm asking.
Well, you know what? If you enjoy it in the morning, and the truth of it is, just go 50-50. Buy a bag of espresso, buy a bag of decaf, kind of mix it in and make it in the morning and slowly wean yourself off of it.
I just went cold turkey. And you know what? And I don't really drink that much
I drink a lot of coffee.
You know what? I got headaches.
Oh, yeah.
I got headaches. So I thought I would compensate with wine.
No, it's always a good idea.
Hey, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Grape Encounters Radio, and our show's best friend, Keith Sarlo's, on the line from Sarlo's & Sons, our very favorite tasting room in Los Olivos, fantastic place. So, hey, give us the skinny on just the lay of the land there at the tasting room, because it's going to be a beautiful day, no doubt, next Saturday, and it's not like everybody's going to have to pack into the tasting room, right?
No, not really. The nice part about being in Los Olivos is, number one, you know where it's at. It's easy to find. We're right on the corner. Just look for our little trailer out front, and we have our park we built right next door.
Okay, but don't get people confused, because the tasting room's not in a trailer.
No, it is.
It's
not
just
in a trailer.
It's part of the decoration, right?
Yeah, we're in an 1886 house right off the highway. On your right-hand side, and it looks like a little home. And we turned it into kind of the house for our wines, if you will.
Which is actually what you call it, right?
Yeah, we call it house.
Now,
Sarlo's & Sons at house.
Did you have problems using a historic building like that for the purposes that you use it for? You're not a registered historical site, right?
Please, no, no.
But, someday you might be. Someday there might actually be a brass placard out in front of the place that says...
We actually have one. It says, it's not here, it's on a different piece of property, and it says, in 1884, on this spot, nothing happened. It's pretty nice.
But a lot happens at the house in Los Olivos.
It's going to be a beautiful day. We got the park next door. Bring your blanket. You can throw that out and enjoy the day. But the fun part is going to be coming in, tasting wines, and then one of the fun things we get is we get a lot of sommeliers come through here.
Yeah.
And because on our labels, the back label actually has what it is. The front label usually has a family picture on it. We usually pour sommeliers and ask them what they think it is. And it's a...
Don't tell the answer to that, because we've got to go to commercials.
I'm very
curious about what the answer to that is. Hey, you're listening to Grape Encounters Radio. We got Keith Sarlos from Sarlos & Sons on talking about Wine Wars next Saturday at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. We're going to be back in just a second after these commercials. Hang in there.
My heart is drenched.
Yes, indeed. We are back with Grape Encounters Radio and our best buddy, Keith Sarlos. And, you know, Keith, I have to be careful about talking about how friendly we are with you, because we want to be really objective with Wine Wars.
Well, I hope so.
You know, the Sipper Bowl is what we're calling it. I think it's a really good name. And because we really love the people at Landon Winery in Texas. They're wonderful, wonderful people. And, you know, coming all the way out by Greyhound bus to do this challenge, bringing their wines and, you know, and their hopes and dreams with them. And we want to, when we actually do the tasting, we want to keep it really objective, right? And no matter how much we love you, Keith.
Well, hey.
And your family, it's like if we like the other wines better, you know, we're going to say so.
You know, it's one of these things that if you're wine tasting and enjoying yourself, how can you ever lose?
You know what? It's really true, and they're really in some ways are no bad wines. It just depends on the circumstance. Like if you're in a FedEx plane crash on a desert island, you're Tom Hanks, you know, and you're spending your day just talking to Wilson the volleyball, and then all of a sudden a case of $2 something or other washes up.
I would be the happiest day of my life.
You'd be the happiest person on earth.
Absolutely.
I was out on Catalina Island the other day.
Yeah.
And I took the, it was a real long day of meetings out there, and we had some stuff going on. And I took the boat back, the 7:30 boat back. And anyway, I thought, gosh, I could really use a glass of wine. And they have these little half bottles of Kendall Jackson Merlot.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, boy.
I got to tell you something, you know, just sitting on a boat and, you know, you're totally worn out and you recline the seat and, you know, it could have been anything. It tasted so good under
Absolutely.
The circumstances. Now, it might not have been something I would have enjoyed, you know, at home with a big dinner party going on, but I don't know. But it sure seemed good at that particular moment.
Absolutely.
So talk to us about the sommeliers who come into Sarlos & Sons.
Well, every once in a while we have them come in and we pour them, and we don't tell them what it is, and we ask them to tell us what they think it is.
And you mean, what varietal?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, can they really screw that up?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I think most of them do, to be honest.
Really?
Because most of them aren't put on the spot like that.
Like, what are they confused?
You know what? I feel so bad saying this, but we had a you know, very nice person came in and tasted, and I said, what do you think it is? And they said, well, I think it's Pinot. And I said, well, actually, it'd be a Syrah.
What?
And they went, really? And I went, yeah. And the guy next to me goes, I knew it was a Syrah. And I went, you did, huh? And he goes, oh, yeah. I said, do you drink a lot? He goes, no, but I know what I like. And that guy is my best buddy.
Really?
You know what? It's like an art critic. Wine is it's so subjective. It's all taste. It's all tasting. And, you know... There's kingmakers who give points to things, and to be honest with you, go out, go experience, go experiment, find out what you love, and that could be the greatest thing on earth for you. I mean, if you get a French dip at Philippe's in Los Angeles, I mean, sometimes that tastes 10 times better than a filet mignon in New York City. You know, give me a break.
Hey, speaking of sandwiches,
yeah.
I saw. On the Food Channel last weekend, a feature, I think it was last weekend, yeah, a feature on, what's the name of the restaurant as you go up the San Marcos Pass?
Oh, you mean Cold Springs Tavern?
Yeah.
That place is awesome.
Have you ever had one of their sandwiches?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Really? I've never been there.
Well, yeah, how have you you not been there?
I don't know. I hear about it all the time. And then so I'm watching this Food Channel program, just kind of relaxing on a Sunday afternoon. And they did this feature, and I thought, oh, my God.
Isn't that the greatest hidden gem in the world?
Oh, my gosh. It was the most beautiful sandwich I've ever seen. And I was sitting there, I was thinking, I got to get those guys on the show for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe we could pair some of your wines with their sandwich.
You know, if you go
out there
on a Sunday, it turns into a really cool midway stop for a lot of motorcyclists. It's a great stop.
Yeah, it's like the what's the place out in? You're from the LA area. The Rock. What's it called? I want to say it's up Topanga, the Rock House or the.
I've never been there.
Well, which seems impossible to me because you are the most worldly person that I've ever known. But anyway, no, the sandwich looked really good. But so back to the sommeliers for a second.
Sure.
It's really possible for a trained, savvy wine taster to confuse a Pinot with you said Syrah?
Well, yeah, and you know what?
It is
a big stretch, but
yeah.
You know what? If you, and I said that to a buddy of mine who's a chef, and I said, hey, can you believe that would happen? And he goes, you would be surprised how many people that work in a kitchen or in a chef, a cooking environment.
Right.
If you blindfold them and you cut up five different things, and you just pop them in people's mouths so they taste them and have to identify it.
Right.
Most people can't. Even chefs.
Like, what would be acceptable wines to confuse? A Merlot and a Cab, maybe?
You know what? I don't...
Is there any such thing?
To me, it really comes down to, once again, personality. Because I have tasted some Pinots that taste like Syrahs.
Yeah.
I have tasted, you know, some Chardonnays that are like Sauvignon Blanc.
How about Syrahs and Zins?
You know what? I am probably the worst person to talk about Zin in the world.
Why?
I have my Zin knowledge is so limited.
Really? And have you ever even thought about making Zins?
You know what? No, not really. I mean, one of the with Zins, it's kind of a funny question because a lot of people ask me, you know, do I like Zin? Do I like Cabs? Do I like this? I like that, and my conversation goes to, you know, when I taste now, I like tasting wines from, you know, this is a little inside baseball, but I like tasting wines from our wine region because I want to see what people are doing with the palate or the taste or the style of grapes that grow best here.
Right.
So I love tasting Cabernet from our region because you get a pretty diverse group. I love tasting Syrah and all the Rhones. I love tasting, you know, pretty much anything. But, you know, Zin is a pretty lightly planted crop here.
Not if you go a little farther north, you know, you get up into Paso Robles and there's just
and
a ton of Zin.
I rarely get up to Paso these days.
It's not very far away.
Not very far away.
And I got to tell you, there's the Zins out of Paso are as good as anything on the planet, I think.
No, I would almost agree with you.
Yeah, I love Zins. The thing is, I started to really move into the Syrah world.
Yeah.
And I think I just like Syrahs a little bit better on balance. I mean, but, you know, there are great Syrahs and great Zins, but I probably drink twice as much Syrah as Zin.
Yeah, I would definitely say I'm a definitely Rhone boy.
So here's the thing about Wine Wars next Saturday is we're not going to be going, you know, head to head. In other words, the varietals that they're bringing may be a little bit different than
what do you like, I think.
It's going to be what do you like. That's it. And and talk to our listeners about the marbles and what we're going to do.
Oh yeah, well we do need to figure this out a little bit more complete, but it really wouldn't be our style, unless we did it right at the last moment and it had to be awesome.
Well, I like the marbles idea a lot.
Yeah, I like the marbles
and I think we're
going to
go.
Fun.
We're going to go with that. So
perfect.
So we're going to have some containers that you can't look into because we don't.
Yeah, we're going to have some opaque containers,
right.
Or maybe even peel the labels off. And pour some wine, and you get to say, hey, I like this one, or I like that one.
Right.
And then you drop your little marble in the one you like.
Right.
And that's as scientific as we're going to make it.
And then at the end of the day, we're going to count the marbles, right?
Absolutely.
Now, the other thing is we're going to gather some of the experts from the area and have a professional judgment.
That'd be great.
As well as a lay judgment, right?
Yeah, we've never had a professional judgment.
Are you serious? So what happens? Hey, Keith, would you like be really, really bummed if you lost in your home turf, on your home turf?
Oh, man, I hate losing.
Would you throw yourself on a sword, perhaps?
Or? I don't know. I won't go harikari. I won't do that.
Drink yourself.
We are. I think the wager currently is a California state flag versus a Texas flag, and I cannot wait. I already have my flag. I've unfurled it because that's the only thing you unfurl is a flag.
You actually have it hanging right now?
Oh man, I got it. I'm gonna iron it. I gotta get the crease marks out. I bought a brand new flag, and I can't wait to put it on the line.
Now I wonder if you're actually allowed to iron an American flag.
No, it's not American. It's California.
Okay, I mean California
and
flag.
And it can touch the ground, evidently, from what I understand.
Yeah, I know. Remember when we were kids, there were all kinds of really strict rules about
the handling of the flag. Those rules are still well in effect in our family.
But in your family?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you guys are diehard Americans.
No, you know what? We have a flag on every piece of property we have.
Really?
And my dad has a stack of 15 or 20 flags in reserve. If he ever sees a flag that looks tattered, he'll swap it out on a fly. He might do it on another somebody else's place.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And he's driving down the road, he sees somebody else's flag, and he's going,
Or if it's a buddy of his, and he cruises over his house, he's like, hey, man, what's up with your flag? You know, kind of give him a hard time a little bit. And he'll come by the next day, and, hey, here you go. I had one in my truck.
That is a great American thing to do.
Oh, it's great.
Do you take the flags down at night, or are they allowed to fly all night?
Well, if they're lit, you're okay.
That's the distinction.
That's the distinction.
But I wonder if there are the same rules for the California flag that there are for the American flag.
They're not the same. And we, you know what, we have old school California bear flags up, and the neat part is whenever they get, you know, tattered or start to look a little shabby, we always take them down, and the local Cub Scout or Boy Scouts, do a full ceremony.
Cool.
A couple times a year, to be honest with you, and do a full flag burning ceremony. It's actually pretty impressive to watch.
Hey, Keith, can you hang with us for a couple more minutes? I wanted to talk about what wines are likely to be in the challenge.
Oh, yeah, we'll go.
We haven't talked about what wines you're serving up in the tasting room, so we're going
to
be back.
I can't wait till next week. I got to be honest with you. I can't wait for everybody to come in and meet some people from Texas and...
It's going to be totally cool. Hey, hang with us for 1 second.
Sure.
It's Grape Encounters Radio. Keith Sarlos is our guest. We're going to be back in just a second. Hang in there.
A bottle of red, a bottle of white. It all depends upon your appetite. I'll meet you anytime you want.
Hey, back again with Grape Encounters Radio. David Wilson, your host here on this Saturday before the Sipper Bowl Wine Wars at Sarlos & Sons, where our friends from Land & Winery in McKinney, Texas are going to be coming out. Hey, and you know what, you guys, if you want to check out Landon, you can just go online, you can Google them, or you can go to landonwinery.com, I believe is their website. Really nice people. And they've got a lot of photographs, Keith, of the parties that they have. This is a party hardy winery.
Oh, I love these
I'm
guys
telling
already.
You, these guys love to party, I was talking to them the other day about Wine Wars, and they weren't sure where they were staying or exactly what they were going to do when they came out here. They just said, you know, we're a fly by the seat of our pants kind of group.
I really like these guys. I'm not going to feel bad if we might lose by a marble to these guys. These guys sound like good people.
And there's this really wonderful candy store that they have in McKinney, Texas, and they call me up and they go, hey, we're going to go into the candy store for you. What do you want? You know? So I told them, I said, bring enough candy for everybody.
Bring a trash bag full.
I don't know if they'll actually do it, but I hope they do. But here's the deal, folks. If you want to come, we're going to be having the event's going to just go on. It's going to be a hangout, have a good time, drink wine, eat cupcakes and, you know, other goodies and just have a fantastic day in Los Olivos.
It's going to be the best Saturday I can imagine.
Yes, it is. And rain or shine, by the way, but I don't think it's going to rain.
No, we already took care of that this week.
Oh, good, because you know people, right?
Oh, well, we sent a few upstairs.
There you go. Beautiful. Anyway, 11 to 6 o'clock, you can bop by any time. But I really encourage people, just come early and stay forever.
And yeah, we got plenty of room out in the park. Bring a blanket and, you know, enjoy the sunshine and the music and screw around. And
what are the odds of Keith Sarlos applying suntan lotion to some of the guests? Could that happen?
That might be rough. I got to hold bottles, man. I can't have greasy hands.
Mrs. Sarlos probably would not appreciate that.
She might frown upon that.
Either your wife is one of the most beautiful women on earth.
The missus.
Yeah, no.
We named a wine after her this year.
Yeah, no reason to go tiger on her.
No.
Hey, listen. So you named a wine in honor of her. Tell me about that.
Well, we have this year, just real quick, we had the Daughter Chardonnay, which we talked about a little bit.
Right.
We have Solo, and that's our single varietal Syrah, and that one's named after my grandfather. Great photo of him on the label. We served that before 1946, where we had 1945, the Union last year. This is 1946, the moon or the honeymoon. My grandparents' honeymoon photo on it.
Cool.
We have the Brothers, which is a Bordeaux blend, four varietals and four brothers on the label.
Oh, now this is now who are the brothers?
That would be my grandfather, my uncle Harold, my uncle Elmer, and my great uncle John. That is, he was featured on Purple Heart last year.
Yeah, he shouldn't get another chance. I think he should have to wait for a little while.
Well,
don't you think?
I don't know. If you give your life in a war, I think you could be on every year.
Okay, all right, you could be on every bottle.
And then after that, we've got two Pinots.
Wait, can we go back to the four brothers though?
Oh yeah, sure.
The varietals are what now again?
We have Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Petit Verdot.
Beautiful.
True Bordeaux.
Do you love it?
I love it. It's one of the. You know what? A couple of my buddies have gone crazy for it already. So I always like to say I am completely biased because I think our wines are good.
What's that going to sell for?
My friends like them.
How much?
That one is $48. That's one of our more expensive.
Yeah, that's pretty up there for a Sarlos
wine.
Yeah,
but you know what? We had the Ring Effiunk, which was kind of a Bordeaux style blend last year. We sold out of that.
And was that $48 as well?
That was $48 as well.
Hmm.
Okay. Then we have our two Pinots. One, a la West Hagen, is from the Santa Rita Hills, you know, his hood. And that one's called the Misses. It's a real socialite, beautifully delicate, understated Pinot Noir. And we have another one called Extended Family, and that would be from the Santa Maria Valley, another unbelievable Pinot growing region. Then we kind of have kind of the bipolar opposites.
I want to mention, I know Wes Hagen listens to our show every week.
Well, hello, Wes.
And he needs to be at the event next Saturday, and I actually want to make sure that he helps us judge. He had expressed willingness to do that.
That would be great.
We would respect his opinion, right? Totally.
But you know what? Like I said, Wes is one of the smartest guys in wine I know.
He's like practically a guru, right?
He is the Google of wine.
The Google of wine.
He is, absolutely.
Have you ever used that expression in front
the
of
the Google of wine?
Yeah.
No, not really. But, but you know what? His depth of knowledge just on... and recall, those are the two things that, you know, that really go into being a true judge of wine. Because there's a difference between judging wine and enjoying wine.
Yeah.
He is like, you know, he's like a mechanic. He's looking for taste. He's looking for, it's like, a better way to describe it, it's like a dog show. You know, I love dogs. Dogs are good looking. Oh, look at the great attitude, great, you know, a fun dog. But then if you're bringing your dog to a show, your dog is there to be shown, and it's there to be picked apart, and you want to look at it in depth, see abnormalities, see things that are really, really beautiful, and that's what you're doing. You're taking it from a passive enjoyment and making a scientific observation, and Wes does both very, very well.
But he's... he does everything with unbridled passion, I believe.
Great guy, man.
He's if you look at his Facebook posts and stuff, you know, he's
the haikus.
Yeah, but I mean, even he's as into cheese and hamburgers
making salt from ocean water.
Exactly, and we were up there at the Clopepe Vineyard We did a broadcast with Stephen up there, and when we got there, Wes welcomed us. And he said, "Hey, you know, you want a cup of coffee? I roasted the beans myself, and I don't even remember what the variety of the beans was because it was nothing that I had ever heard of."
Right.
And he said, "Hope you like it strong, right?" So,
he gave me the Turkish.
And you know what? When he poured it, he had to actually use a pair of scissors to cut it.
Oh, sure. Awesome.
You know, and it's the first time I've ever had coffee and needed to use a steak knife.
Oh, sure.
But I think that's why...
Stand-up spoon.
Thus my departure from cafe.
Yeah.
Actually, the coffee was really really tasty, but it was mighty powerful.
And you know what? That goes back to wine once again. I mean, characters like Wes, you know, are the epitome of what you want in a wine. You want someone that's so ridiculously in love and passionate about what he's doing that it's not a job anymore. He wakes up, you know, his eyes explode open, just same as mine.
Yeah.
And you get to talk about what you love all day.
Yes.
And then when you're tired, you lay down.
Yes, and he never loses his enthusiasm, as far as I can see.
He's a great guy.
You've become the same kind of character, though. Now, you weren't. Did you ever imagine?
I might be a little more blue collar. I never taught college. I didn't even finish.
Well, no. You are yes, and you are sort of the we sometimes call you the John Belushi.
You know what? I'll
the wine business
to a certain level, but yeah, okay, I'll go.
No, because you're kind of you're more that kind of a playful clown around kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm just like not sometimes, that bright. I like having fun.
I look at your Facebook posts sometimes, and I go, "I don't get it."
Yeah,
and it's just because it's way the humor is way over my head.
No, you know what? It's never above your head. I was raised on a steady diet of Gary Larson Far Side cartoons, as well as Calvin and Hobbes. That's kind of my high level reading, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I have to tell you, those are my two favorites.
Oh man, I love them still.
Calvin and Hobbes is the best.
You can't beat him.
So, but did you ever expect that you were going to become immersed in the wine business and that was going to become your life? Or
you know, not at all. And mostly it was the farming aspect of it. And you know, not a lot of people want to come out and watch you farm.
Yeah.
But when you have a product that you're passionate about because you've taken it from birth to adulthood, if you will,
right,
put it in a bottle and followed it all the way along and just kind of fell in love with it the whole way along and then send it off home with people for them to enjoy it with other people. I mean, that how can you not be excited about that?
But did you love wine before you guys got in the business?
No, you know what? I liked
beer.
I loved watching how excited and terrified our family became when we tore out an apple orchard and knew literally nothing about grapes and threw ourselves so far into it that you couldn't help but love what you were doing because you were doing so much of it. And seeing something progress and transform is a very passionate thing. And
but let me ask you a question. You're making initially the wines for yourselves.
Oh yeah,
your own
absolutely.
Personal. So what about that?
We figured nobody would want this stuff.
Yeah. So what about that moment where you finally decided to start sharing your wine with friends and other people? Did you know? And you pour them a glass. Were you worried at how they were going to react to it?
You know what? To be honest, not really at all. Because the first wines we ever made, we had an unbelievable winemaker named Ken Brown kind of take us under his wing
and
enjoy our grapes and make some unbelievable wines for us. And from there, you know, when you start pouring it, you have a little bit of confidence because you knew the grapes you grew were great and you put it in the hands of a master.
Right.
And having that take place gives you a certain confidence, but also when you taste it and you enjoy it, that's 99% of the way. I mean, I had almost the same feeling this year when we picked our Sauvignon. It was before we picked our Sauvignon Blanc, and it just popped, and it tasted like heaven. And just pulling it right off the vine, and my dad and I just kept walking and eating grapes off the vine and looking at each other and smiling because, you know, 2 years ago, we tore it out and planted them. Had no idea what this stuff would ever taste like.
How do you know it's going to be a great wine just because the grape is good?
You know, I'll say it the way, like the same chef that said it to me. You know, it's everything comes down to ingredients and tools. If you want to make the world's greatest steak, you start with the world's greatest cut of beef.
Hey, Keith, you got, hold that thought for one second, okay? We got to take one more quick break. I just need you for a couple more minutes, okay?
I
swear. But I want you to hold that thought, and we will be right back with Grape Encounters Radio in just a second, folks. Okay, we are back with our fourth and final segment. We didn't mean to keep Keith Sarlos on quite so long. I told him it would just be a few minutes, but then we get all philosophical and, God.
Hey, man, we're talking wine. It's going to happen.
Well, no, but now you're talking steak, right?
Well, you know, going back to that, you asked, you know, what makes a great wine? And like a friend said, who's a chef, you know, to make the world's greatest steak, as a chef, you need the world's greatest cut of beef. And then you need to know when to sear it on two sides and when to serve it.
Yep. And, okay. But here's where I differ with you.
Okay.
I had an experience just last weekend. I'm going to share with you about a cut of beef. And by the way, it's Keith Sarlos, Sarlos & Sons, on Grape Encounters Radio. It's David Wilson, your host. And we started off talking about wines and our Wine War event that's coming up next weekend. But now Keith has got us talking about red meat.
Well, yeah, we raise cattle. So,
I had an experience, and actually, this wasn't with red meat; it was the other white meat. I was going to do something. Pork.
Oh, yeah, got it.
Well, I was going to do something with a really nice pork loin.
Sure.
Last weekend, and then I was talking to the butcher,
right.
and they had these like a pork shank or something. It's like it's really cheap. It, you know, $1.69 a pound or something. It's got a big bone in it and
good stuff, man.
Yeah, a lot of fat on it and whatever, you know. And I go, well, what do you do with that? And he goes, well, most people make carne asada with it,
right?
You know, and they just cook the life out of it, you know.
Right.
And I thought, you know, that'd be fun. I could buy that. I wonder what I could do with this $1.69 a pound meat versus the, you know, 12-something a pound for the really nice loin. I got to tell you, it was so good.
Now, what did you do? Then let me ask you a question. Did you marinate it?
I did not marinate it. No,
you just served it.
I slow cooked it.
Right.
And I put what I did was I sauteed some, you know, a bunch of onions, sauteed mushrooms, added various spices and pepper and some rock salt.
Okay, now let me stop you right there.
Okay.
Now what you did was you seasoned it. You took and put everything together, and
right.
you made a what's the right word? Conglomeration.
A little pork symphony.
It's symphony.
Yes.
One of the things, if you're doing that, that's one thing.
I know what you're going to say.
But if
you're going to say that it really wasn't the meat that
it
was.
It wasn't the meat. It was everything. It was more or less like when you were sitting there enjoying that, you know, great bottle of KJ on the boat. It was everything that made that taste great. But if you're just going and you're tasting, like when you say a product or a grape or a steak, and you are looking and judging and putting merit upon just that and not the surroundings, you're really in the vacuum. You have to have top quality product, because you can make bad wine from bad grapes, you can make bad wine from great grapes, but the only way you make a truly spectacular wine is to start with truly spectacular grapes.
And so you're saying there's no, it's virtually impossible to make something enjoyable from bad grapes.
No, I'm not going to say enjoyable. I'm saying a good wine.
I twisted the words a little bit there.
I know, you did a good job.
Hence the birth of White Zinfandel.
Foot wash, yay!
Yikes. But see, even with a great steak, you're still using seasoning. You go to, you know, Ruth's Chris or...
Not us.
You don't?
No, we
nothing.
See, we raise our own beef. And
no
when
salt.
You serve it, I mean, it's two sides on heat, call it good.
No salt?
No.
Nothing.
We're doing a disservice to the cow by doing that. You know, it's kind of one thing. If you want to go for purity, that's kind of
the gig. Do you put sauteed onions on it or anything?
No,
you just eat the no A1 sauce, no Heinz 57.
No.
Oh, forgive me.
No, you're hiding the meat. It would be like if you here's the equivalent. If you open a good bottle of wine and pour and it wasn't sweet enough and you poured grape juice into it.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Well, I don't know, but it seems like you're taking purity an extreme here with the state?
Well, I wouldn't say purity to extreme. I'm saying if you're going to, just like with a wine, or if you go with meat or beef or whatever, I'm not talking about the overall experience. I'm saying if you're opening a great bottle of wine, that bottle of wine should taste great if you, no matter what situation you're in.
Okay.
And a beef or a dinner, you should be able to cut into it, not have a pound of butter on it, not have seasoning and spice, and just taste the beef. And if it tastes like heaven, that is a great cut.
Okay.
But you know what? C'est la vie. If you want tons of pepper, tons of spice, tons of sugar, and all that, if that makes you happy, by all means, go and do it.
But you know, if you go to pretty much any other country, I don't know if that's true, pretty much any other, but most countries, they sell something called table wine.
Oh yeah, sure.
We don't really have table wine here that I can.
Yeah, we do.
Like what?
Trader Joe's.
Well, okay, yeah, but
that
I mean,
is table wine.
But for the most part, when you go into like a really good grocery store, like a really good Albertsons, the Albertsons in Solvang, has a really, or Buellton, has a really, really good selection of wine, you know,
great
given
selection.
That it's a grocery store, right?
Sure.
You know, you don't see us, there's not much in the way of table wine for sale there.
You know what?
Yeah, it's broken into varietals, you know?
It's really what you consider table wine, though.
Well, but my point is this, is you go into another country, you go to, Germany, as an example, and they've got table wine, and it's just, they think of it like we think of iced tea.
Yeah, but that's more cultural than anything else.
Yeah, well, I guess, but I'm just saying that...
We should bring it back.
It doesn't have to be great, it's just wine, you know, with a blue stripe across it. You know, generic wine, and it serves, like I said,
Trader Joe's.
It serves its purpose.
Trader Joe's serves its purpose.
Hey, by the way, have you tried the wines that Trader Joe's is now
absolutely
selling under their own label now?
Well, you know, here you want a great little insight.
Go ahead.
One of the world's greatest mixers. I kid you not.
Okay.
Pour about a half a glass of wine out of one of those bottles.
Okay.
Pour vodka back into it. Shake it up. Bring it to a party. Unbelievable. So much fun. It is like the ghetto sangria. It is awesome.
Sorry.
It's delicious.
Hey, listen, can I invite myself over for a steak with the Sarlo's family? I mean, seriously, because I want to really watch you eat it with no salt, no seasoning, no sauteed mushrooms, no nothing. I want to see that. I want to see the look on your face, because you can't lie. You can't hide those lion eyes.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah.
I'll give you my dad's number. You can call him right
now. Okay, well, no, I'm going to ask him next Saturday.
Yeah.
For sure. We're going to have a discussion about
mashed
this.
Mashed potatoes. You always should have some mashed potatoes, though. And a little applesauce.
Do you know what I put in my mashed potatoes?
Bacon?
Chunks of lobster.
Really? Oh, you're so high society.
Yeah, it's chunks of lobster and take the skin, the outer skin off some brie cheese and throw it in there with your mashed. Just try that. It's fantastic.
Dude, anyway, that's awesome.
But we can talk about recipes, and we can talk about steak. And
I just want to see everybody at Wine Wars next week.
Exactly. So tell them how to get there.
The best way, if you're coming north of Los Olivos from the Santa Maria area or above, just take 101 south. Get off on Highway 154 and Grand Avenue, right on your right-hand side. First little town you're going to get to is Los Olivos. You'll see our park. You'll see our little trailer and our tasting room. And if you're coming from the Santa Barbara area or Point South, if you want a beautiful drive, go 101 to the 154 over the pass. Follow for about 28 miles from Santa Barbara, and Los Olivos will be on your left-hand side, just past the stop sign.
That's a great drive, but drive careful, because there are loony people on that road.
If you want to windows down, just take the 101 all the way around.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic time.
Looking forward to it. I can't wait to meet these guys from Texas, and can't wait to taste their wines and have a very enjoyable afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Keith, I can't wait to see you. On Saturday, we will be there with bells on, and
I can't wait.
It's going to be fun. Hey, that's it for until Wine Wars next week. It's Dave Wilson. Thanks to my guest Keith Sarlos of Sarlos and Sons. We're going to see you at the Sarlos and Sons. Oh, that was a mouthful. We're going to see you at the Sarlos and Sons Tasting Room next Saturday from 11 to 6 when we're there with the Sarlos and Sons folks and Landon Winery of McKinney, Texas.
Sounds great. Thank
until
you
then,
very much,
we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you soon, or find us online at GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
See you guys.
Yeah, take it easy. Hey, thanks, Keith.
Thanks.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.